jaya radha madhava kunja bihari jaya radha madhava kunja bihari Gopi jana balabha giribhara dhadi Gopi jana balabha giribhara dhadi Giribhara dhadi Yasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yamanatira Vanachadi Niravanachadi Yamuna Tira Vanachari Tira Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Jaya Vishnupadpada Bahamsa Parivirgacharja Asta Tarasata Sri Srimad's Divine Grace Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gorpima I'm a little confused here. The verse that's written on the board is not the verse for this morning. Can somebody help me out? 62. It says 58, 59, but it's 62. Is that right? Oh, you changed it. Oh. Okay. Very good. 62. Yosmin snatva mad akride devadim starpaye jalai upashyamam smaran archit Sarva papai pramuchate Yosmin snatva madakride Deva deems tarpaye jalai Upashyamam smaran archit Sarva papai pramuchate. Deva deem tarpayej jalai. Yosmin snat vamada kride Deva Yosmin snat vamad akride Deva deems tarpayej jalai Upashamam smaran archet Sarva papai pramuchate Yosmin snat vamada kride Deva deems tarpayej jalai O pashyamam smarit archit Sarva papai pramuchate Yaha, who, asmin, in this, Kaliya's lake in the Jamuna River, snatva, bathing, mad-akride, the place of my pastime, deva-adin, the demigods and other worshipable personalities, Tarpayet gratifies Jalai with the water of that lake. Uposha, observe a fast. Mam, me, smaran, remembering. Archet performs worship. Sarva papai, from all sinful reactions. Pramuchyate, he becomes freed. I can't help it. Popeye. Those of you that are American, you know that one. Okay. Text 60. Shukadeva Goswami said, after hearing Kaliya's words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was acting the role of a human being, replied, O serpent, you may not remain here any longer. Go back to the ocean. Immediately, Samudra, ocean. Accompanied by your retinue of children, wives, other relatives and friends, let this river be enjoyed by the cows and humans. Now there's some nice commentary, very interesting commentary. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, though difficult for Brahma or Shiva to do, Krishna was able to punish Kaliya just by using a human form, Karya Manusha. He did not hold his Shankha and Chakra for this act. Karya can also mean pastime. Thus, Karya Manusha can mean, quote, he who takes a form of a human for performing sweet pastimes. Or Karya Manusha can mean Brahman which takes the form of a human. Or Karya Manusha can mean the Lord who performs activities among humans. Karya Manusha said, quote, you must go from here along with your children and wives to the ocean because the cows and cowherd men use this river Jamuna with its water and banks filled with grass, leaves, and fruits. Jamuna Tira. Vanachari. Now, earlier in the chapter, it said, for quite some distance, all the vegetation and everything had died off. So, filled the bank, its water in the banks filled with grass, leaves, and fruits after Kalia leaves. Jiva Goswami writes on this text 60. Hearing this, Krishna replied, he speaks with the understanding that whatever he says, Kalia should do. Bhagavan appears in his own human form to benefit the humans, Karya Manusha. Or he performs play, Karya, with human-like pastimes, Manusha, not with a material body. Or he spreads his prema, Karya, to all men, Manusha, since humans are the principal objects when he appears among humans. This means that it is improper for snakes to be present at the main abode of the Lord, Vrindavan. Or he has devotees, Manusha, worthy of respect, Arya, worthy of respect, by even Brahma. Ka. So Karya. Built within even Brahma and Shiva would have difficulty, but Krishna was easy. Karya. Karya. Manusha. To make them happy, you should not remain here. Oh, snake, it is improper to remain here. This shows that Kaliya's ability to move, since Sarpa means to crawl. He should go with his relatives. The word sva indicates that they had similar poison and also shows they were dependent on him. So some mention here is go to the ocean, Samudra. And a little background. Kaliya, his previous residence was at Ramanaka Island, which has Ramanaka Lake by the ocean. And Ramanaka is a place near Fiji. And there are legends in Fiji. One of the main deities of Krishna in Fiji is, guess who? Kaliya Krishna. Because that was where Kaliya hung out. And how did Kaliya come to hang out at Ramanaka? I mentioned, going back. Veda Shira and Agashira, Astashira, something like that. Living on a mountain. Vedashira was residing there. And Astashira said, oh, great place. Let's do austerities together. This mountain isn't big enough for both of us. You're going to have to find another mountain. Sorry, Charlie. So, Astashira said, you're a scholar of the Vedas, and you think this is your mountain? Everything's the property of Vishnu. He's the source of everything. Go find your own mountain. So then they counter-cursed one another. This is envy. You should become a serpent. And then Vedashira counter-cursed him. You should become a crow. Now, it doesn't say specifically which crow that was. But some accept it was the crow that got liberated in Nila Parvat. The crow that was swooping down and took some water and became a form of Vishnu. And Nila Parvat, you know, in Jagannath Puri, the crow, become a crow. he became. So the counter cursing and counter cursing means from sages, you know, how are they doing that? But there's some benediction at the other end, although it doesn't look like it, at least in this case. So Vedashira became Kaliya. Kaliya took his residence at Ramanaka. Ramanaka is an island, but there's also Ramanaka Lake. And we told the other history. Ramanaka, so it's the beginning of this chapter. Garuda had a curse from Shobhari. Now, who can curse Garuda? Nobody. But he accepted, because it was part of Krishna's pastime, that Shobhari was underwater doing his meditation thing, and Garuda came to get some fish, and Shobhari said, leave this place, or you come back again and you're dead. You can't curse Garuda, but he accepted, so he didn't come back. Meanwhile, Kaliya, the serpent, was envious as a serpent, and when Garuda was going to Ramanaka to get food, the serpents made a deal. You know, we'll give you some offering on some periodic basis, and you don't come and take our lives. So Kaliya decided when it was his turn, why him? I'll take the offering, and he ate the offering. So Garuda was after him. And Kaliya fled, and he took advice that there's one place you can go where Garuda won't chase you. Go to Vrindavan. Go to this lake, and he won't go there. That's the lake where Shobhari Muni was doing his meditation underwater. It's a long story. But so now he's being told, go back to the Samudra, go back to Ramanaka, where you came from. But now he's purified by the touch of Krishna's feet upon his head. Although he's purified, he's still, his tendency for envy is gone, but the indication in the commentary is his associates weren't. They were also poisonous. And so, leave this place. That's text 60. If a mortal being attentively remembers my command to you to leave Vrindavan and go to the ocean, and narrates this account at sunrise and sunset. Well, it's not sunrise or sunset. He will never be afraid of you. Commentary. Vishwanath writes, may my fame of being punished by placing your feet on my head remain as long as the sun and moon endure. Unquote. That's paraphrasing the thought of Kaliya. Because of the statement, you will no longer have fear of snakes, this verse should be considered a mantra to ward off snake bites. And Jiva Goswami's commentary. The person who, while glorifying at the two sandhyas, sunrise, sunset, remembers just my command to be given to you, what to speak of the pastimes in the water, becomes free from fear. The last two lines of verse 60, the previous, and this verse are a mantra to ward off snakes. just in case you needed a mantra to ward off snakes. There is another mantra in the Rig Veda. It's a long one. Translation given. He who carries the Lord appeared in a lake in the Yamuna. It's Rig Veda. Rig Veda. There may be fear of Kalika, or the snake Kaliya, or his servant. But Kaliya left the place of the Lord and it became free of poison. Right in Rig Veda. The verse that we chanted this morning is text 62. If one bathes in this place of my pastimes and offers the water of this lake to the demigods and other worshipable personalities, that's this Deva, Adi, demigods, etc., or if one observes a fast and duly worships and remembers me, he is sure to become free from all sinful reactions. So it's Krishna's giving this benediction. In case you're concerned about sinful reactions, here's what to do. Besides chant Hare Krishna, you can do this. According to purport in the Bhagavatam, according to the Acharyas, the Lord spoke this verse to make it clear to Kaliya that he could by no means remain in the Jamuna Lake, although the Lord had mercifully pardoned the serpent and ordered him to go to the ocean with all his associates. Kaliya should not even consider requesting to remain in the lake because it was now to become a holy place for spiritual pilgrims. And the purport by Vishwanath, quote, for these reasons you should leave this lake. Here people bathe, perform tarpana. Tarpana means offering of oblations, take waters and offer to the Jamuna. Fast, meditate, and worship me to free themselves of sin. If you stay, they cannot do this. They would be afraid. There's other references to this where, without the details, seeing the snake, they saw the snake before this pastime took place. So they were afraid. So if you're around, they don't, so please, even if he's, like, cleaned up now from his envy. Jiva Goswami comments, by offering water, etc., one becomes free of the effects of poisonous water. Prahlad. If one fasts in a holy place, thinks of me, and worships me, he becomes free of three types of sin, along with the desires as well. Muchate. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. So Krishna has wonderful pastimes to give us subject matter for hearing and chanting and remembering him. And by hearing and chanting and remembering him, and his pastimes, and his associates, and his mercy, and everything, not only we become free of sins, but more importantly, yesham tvantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandvamoha nirbukta. What's the last part? Vajante mam tridha vrataha. Vajante mam dridha vrata. That's the best part. Vajante mam dridha vrata. So, dridha vrata. Great determination, great vow. is a result beyond becoming free from papa. Yusham tontakatam papam jananam punya. So this punya karma is beyond the mundane punya karma. I mean, mundane punya karma is not bad if you do it for Krishna. If you offer oblations to the demigods and other worshipable personalities for the pleasure of Krishna. The pastime where Nanda Maharaj was being swallowed by a serpent, the occasion was Nanda Maharaj. Now, is Nanda Maharaj a pure devotee, or is Nanda Maharaj a pure devotee? So he, the head of all the residents of Braja, went some distant place to offer some worship of some demigod, I forget which one. And they were far away, and so it took all day, and so they took rest out there. And that's when this big serpent came and started to swallow him. Now, why was he worshiping a demigod? I mean, doesn't that give a wrong signal to us, like, you know, what's... He doesn't see the demigods as persons who can offer benedictions for material enjoyment. No way. Because he doesn't need benedictions for material enjoyment. It's something similar. The commentary, I don't know. Maybe there is commentary about this. But I know for Katyayani, there's very clear commentary. There's Katyayani, who's an expansion of Durga, or Maya Shakti, and the gopis aren't worshipping Durga, or the goddess Katyayani of this world. They were worshipping the internal potency to get Krishna as their husband. That's what our acharyas explained. Now, they weren't Vedantists. Vyasadeva hadn't even written Vedanta Sutra. They weren't Vedanta. They were village girls. But they knew, and so they did, and with the purpose. So whether it was like a cognitive purpose or just a practical purpose, they wanted Krishna as their husband. And he reciprocated. Very amazing. Super amazing narration by Rupa Goswami of how not only Krishna married the gopis when Krishna expanded himself as each of the calves and cowherd boys, and then there was this marriage when they were little children, so Krishna married them. But Rupa Goswami's Lalita Madhava Vidagdha Madhava explains in fascinating detail the 16,108 gopis, queens in Dwarka were gopis. Krishna married them. It's way up there. But Rupa Goswami isn't telling a fairy tale. So, it's pastime. And how do we understand pastime other than through the Bhagavatam, and even the Bhagavatam through an explanation of our great acharyas? So while Krishna is offering this benediction, it's more than what it appears to be. Far more. You become free from sin if you offer oblations of the river Jamuna to the demigods. Why is Shukadeva Goswami narrating that as well? He has no interest in material benediction. It's the fascinating nature of Krishna is not ordinary. It's beyond ordinary comprehension. And that plays into our lives. You know, Krishna is reciprocating with us to help us come to him. You know, sometimes, more than sometimes, we don't really understand why Krishna does what Krishna does, or Krishna sanctions what Krishna sanctions. Because it looked like, gee, if I was Krishna, I wouldn't do things that way. Fortunately, we're not Krishna. And at least for Krishna's devotees, at least, according to Brahma Samhita, he takes away, Govinda takes away the root, the very root of interest in fruitive activities. And sometimes it's painful because we're attached to fruitive activities, or we're attached to the sense of being the enjoyer of the fruits of our fruitive activities. Now, it's really basic teaching Bhagavad Gita. Yes, chapter 2, chapter 3, don't be attached. Karma, we discussed it the other evening. Karma ne vadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. Ma pala. Don't be attached to the pala. Because if you get attached to the pala, you suffer. You're responsible for the action, reaction, good, bad, and you suffer. Good, bad. You suffer. You get another body and you keep on the wheel of birth and death. So how do you get free from the attachment to the pala? Sometimes you have to undergo an ordeal. Sometimes. There's other means. You don't have to. But if you remain attached, Krishna is very kind. He'll help you. And when he helps you, don't say, ouch. Just say, thank you. Easy to say, right? And then when you go through the ordeal, it's like, ooh. It's really common. Those who are engaged in reaching to audiences, different audiences, it's a problem. It's a faith challenge. When bad things happen to good people. And it doesn't even have to be to them, it can be their friend. You know, why? Prabhupada tells the story. He doesn't give the name, but at least my understanding is it's his godbrother. There was a German professor who heard about Bhaktisiddhanta. And he came and he met Bhaktisiddhanta and he became his disciple. He was interested at that time, earlier than that time also, during the British rule, but people of Europe were interested in the Vedas. And the Vedas, the root of the Vedas is India. So he went to India to see, you know, the same professor that he saw different deities, and then he accepted that Krishna must be God because he doesn't have to do anything. And everybody else is doing something, especially in Calcutta. Durga and Kali and boy, is she doing things. But Krishna just is enjoying, so he must be God. So he shared apparently with Prabhupada that when he went back to Germany or in Germany, people had become atheists. Probably other places they became atheists too because they were praying to God. Please send back our son, husband, father, brother, whatever, from the war. And when they didn't come back, they became atheists. Because God is our order supplier and he didn't supply. So they checked out. Bad things can happen. But it's not simply because God's mean. Some people, it works. You know, in the mode of ignorance to hear the wrath of God. If you sin, you go into the bad place, you're going to burned. You know that one. Intelligent people aren't inspired by that. But some people aren't intelligent. They're inspired by that. Well, I'd better sit straight because I'm going to get spanked. But Krishna's not like that. Krishna's all attractive and Krishna's all kind. Our Krishna is kind. I'm saying our Krishna in this sense. Here's a Ravindra Swarup Prabhu story. He was telling, I've heard him tell this story like 5 times. He was giving a class at in the South Chicago, in that place that's like a loft where there's a restaurant downstairs and the loft upstairs in the university's area. And he was giving a class, like a gathering. And right in the middle of the class, the man, somebody in the audience, interrupted and said, I don't believe in God. So Ravindra stopped the class and said, tell me that God that you don't believe in. And the man went off about God lets people suffer and stuff like that. So then Ravindra, just patiently, listened to the man rant and said, I don't believe in that God either. I share with you my disbelief in that God. Now let me tell you about, or would you like to hear, the God that I believe in. And the man went, you know, go right ahead. So after Ravindra explained in his unique way of explaining things, the man was happy. So what's our conception? It's not a small thing. What's your conception? I spent some time yesterday about the Buddhist conception of void. Here's another little story. It's just, it's on the point of Krishna is all attractive and Krishna performs pastimes that they're all very kind. They're mysterious, but part of the mystery is the wonder of Krishna. How wonderful is my Krishna? Just a story. I contacted Krishna consciousness when I was in college. And the person who ran the center where I was a student was Rupanuga Prabhu. Later, Rupanuga became the president in the New York Temple, and I was a brahmachari in the New York Temple. So I was, one of the things that I did college preaching is I was his assistant, so he really liked college preaching, even as the president, so he had somebody make arrangements, and at that time, one of the arrangements was classroom speaking. We didn't have clubs and things like we have now. So it's just like a one-off thing. Here was his routine. He was naturally bald. You Western people know who Yul Brynner is. He looked like Yul Brynner. He was really tall. And so he came in totally silent. Everyone's looking at Yul Brynner coming in like this TV celebrity or movie celebrity. And he set up a cloth on the floor and a picture of Krishna, Gopal Krishna, with his armor on the cow and the rock behind him. Lit a stick of incense, offered it, said nothing. Just did the show and then sat up, sat real straight, and looked around, and everybody was like, what's this guy going to say? And then his first words were, what's the highest truth you know? It was like spellbounding. How are people going to respond to that? But that's where he started. He It's like, you know, Krishna asking Ramana Roy, what's the goal of life and how to achieve it? That's where he started. And then depending upon what people would say, he would dismantle it and say, you know, this is the highest truth I know. I would never do something like that. But he did it all the time. It was like his routine. And it was, you know, for his personality, it was effective. Because people really were paying attention. They weren't spacing out at all. It was like, wow. So he had their full attention, and he started way up here. And it's important to know what's the highest truth. It's important to know the concept of God that you don't believe in. You know, the God word is like a no-no these days for a lot of people. Big no-no. So you don't say it because it's a no-no. It's a negative emotion buzz. But, you know, what's the highest truth you know? And a lot of people, just like a lot of people, don't know what the purpose of the Vedas is, although they think they know what the Vedas are and what the purpose of the Vedas are. Krishna says two things. The purpose of the Vedas is to know him, and over here he says, most people think the purpose of the Vedas is material prosperity and go to heaven. That's it. And nothing more. And it's not just the Vedas, it's Dharma. I mean, you know, this ism, that ism. Just a little sharing, same, you know, in China, Buddhism is really popular, and the brand of Buddhism that's most popular is called Pure Land Buddhism, and here's the way it goes. Pure Land Buddhism was created, the Pure Land was created by Amitabha Buddha. This is a simplified version because there are different brands of even Pure Land Buddhism, but the basic one goes like this. Amitabha Buddha was really merciful. He saw a lot of people aren't going to make it to Nirvana. So out of his power, he created this Pure Land thing. And it's for people that can't make it to Nirvana. They can go to the Pure Land. It's like heaven. But it, you know, it's another temporary place. You live a long time and you enjoy da-da-da-da. It's like heaven. And if you're really fortunate, you get trained up how to go to the Nirvana place. But there everybody else can stay a real long time and enjoy in the Pure Land. And you're supposed to, part of the practice is you have a mantra. And you know, Amitabha Buddha is part of the mantra. You don't say Krishna, you say Amitabha Buddha, please take me to the Pure Land. So I don't know what they say, something like that. What's the higher truth? You know, this Nirvana place, we talked about it yesterday, it doesn't exist. There's no such thing. It's notional. It's emotional. You know, no more suffering. No more anything. You know, Zippo, nada. No desire, no body. No love, no nothing, nothingness. Whew. What an inspiration, huh? One of the classes that Hari Shyam invited me to speak at, I didn't understand, you know, the truth or illusion pill. You showed the hand with the two pills. Which one do you want? It's a movie story. What's the name of the movie? Huh? Matrix. Yeah, okay. I didn't know until you invited me, you know, what the Matrix was all about. But, you know, it's the illusion pill. But they think they're getting the reality pill. It's cheating. The emperor has no clothes. There's no such place. Don't say it too loud because people will boo you off stage. But at least for audiences like this, we should know. And people don't, pardon me, but people don't follow it anyways. But, no, what about us? Do we follow what we say our goal is? Let's clean up our own act before we make it our business to say other people aren't following what their convictions are. It's true. Impersonalism is not a practical way of life. Prabhupada would challenge. It's all one. And give me all your money, because it's all one. Or, why are you wearing a cotton shirt if it's all one? You don't live by that. It's all one. It's all, you know, but in final analysis, it's all one. We don't live that way. It's not a lifestyle. It's not a philosophy that you live by. But philosophy is meant you live by it. Otherwise, what's the use of the philosophy? Like Prabhupada in his talks with Professor Durkheim. Knowledge for knowledge's sake. No, it has to be practical. What's the practical application? So, that you know, the fruit of our activities. We're not meant to be the enjoyer of it, but we live our lives as if we're the enjoyer of it. While saying we, you know, karma yoga. Or offer the fruits to Krishna. When we, you know, at some level we're doing, it's not a zero, but it's not a 10 either. And we need to cultivate what we say. And part of what helps us cultivate what we say is reading Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing attentively, just like these nice descriptions from our acharyas, along with the verses of Shukadeva Goswami himself, to understand the merciful nature of Krishna. How could Kaliya come to the river Jamuna anyways without Krishna's sanctioning it? Go back to Kaliya's words. How could he even get the body of a serpent? Not just by his karma, there has to be some sanction. We can't do anything on our own. So why did Krishna do that? So, you know, to perform a pastime to help us hear some wonderful glories about Krishna's wonderful pastimes. And he can do it however he likes. That's the beautiful thing. We don't have to. I wouldn't do it that way. We're not judges of Krishna's pastimes. We may not understand them. We may not understand how they play in our lives to take us closer to him. We don't necessarily understand everything. That's okay. We're very tiny. But we have to repose our faith somewhere. We repose our faith in this Aparusheya Shabda Pramana, Srimad Bhagavatam, and our great acharyas who disclose truths that are being expressed in this Bhagavatam, in our relationship with Krishna. It's to stimulate that ecstatic love for Krishna. I want to be in Vrindavan with Krishna. It's to stimulate that and be in service to him somehow, however he likes. And if we can't be there, we can be here and be in the mood of wanting to be in service to Krishna in Vrindavan. That's our teaching. That's spontaneous devotion here in Chicago. One of the five most important activities, and we can cultivate that by our hearing and chanting activity done properly. We're being given the greatest gift. We don't even know it, but that's okay. We don't have to know it. We're being given the great gift anyways. by the mercy of our founder Acharya, whose appearance day we're going to be honoring very soon. So, discussion. This is a discussion-oriented group of devotees. No one this morning? Really? I'll just wait it out. Someone will raise their hand. Okay.
Maharaj, I was contemplating this point of the karma yoga, and I was impressed when I heard a speech by Tulsi Gabbard at a Rath Yatra in New York. She was saying how, you know, that she's doing her karma yoga. In other words, she's doing her occupation as a form of yoga. So I wanted to just explore a little bit the difference between the karma yoga and bhakti yoga. At another program I was at, Hanumak Praisaka Maharaj was mentioning that there is this distinction of doing what you're doing because you have some attachment or inclination in that way, versus, you know, how do we understand the difference between those two? Is bhakti a different approach?
There's different explanations on this topic. And it's not that one explanation is the totality of all explanations. That's a starting point. One is what inspires karma yoga for some is I don't want the implication in the reaction to my work. I want moksha. I want that kind of I want akarma, and therefore karma yoga as a way to get my akarma situation. I can do my work without the consequence of the reaction to my work because I'm offering the fruit of my work to Vishnu. So it's the consciousness behind the activity that's different. In bhakti yoga, that's not the anticipation, or in the unmixed bhakti, that's not the anticipation. Bhakti means unmixed, shuddha. Anyabhidhashita shunyam bhakti ruchite. So there's one explanation of a distinction between. Now, something similar to or related to the question that Hari Shyam asked the other day. One has one's psychophysical nature. And if I engage myself according to my psychophysical nature and do that for Krishna, is that karma yoga or is it bhakti yoga? Well, it depends on the consciousness behind your doing so. So the distinction is the consciousness behind one's doing so, even if it's within one's psychophysical nature. Bhakti has the fundamental consciousness that Krishna should be pleased. So like in that little section, don't be attached to not doing your duty or doing your duty. But offer the results of Krishna, whatever the situation is. So that's karma yoga. But it's also, you know, bhuti yoga is the intelligence that's driving bhakti. And bhuti yoga is the completeness of bhakti, and the intelligence behind karma yoga is not the completeness of bhuti. There's intelligence guiding the one who's performing karma yoga. So why she's using the term karma yoga, you have to ask her. Why she didn't say bhakti yoga instead of karma yoga, you have to ask her. Maybe it's more acceptable for the audiences that she's dealing with? I don't know. So there's different explanations of that. What's the distinction between the two? If you take Bhakti Shastri course or study the study material for Bhakti Shastri course, I'm sure you'll come up with two or three other, you know, supplementary explanations of the distinction. How's that? I saw a hand over here. Krishnarchana.
Persons that practice making offerings to demigods for the purpose of health or prosperity.
For the purpose of?
Health or prosperity.
Health and prosperity.
Yes.
Health and prosperity. Okay.
You had brought up the point that there's faith gets shaken. So if perhaps illness comes, like severe illness comes, and somebody is practicing making those kind of going through the particular rituals, fasting, or making some offerings to demigods, then indeed the faith is shaken. So it's still like, from my perspective, it still seems a little bit sensitive to advise a person to turn their attention to Krishna exclusively when they're completely attached to their rituals, even though their faith is getting shaken. So what is a kind of a delicate way to introduce a new idea to somebody who's very attached to their various rituals for health and prosperity, even if they're in a faith-challenged spot? Sorry, if I do I have to try again?
That's exactly what I think you're asking.
Okay.
Some people are over there and doing things to get something material, and devotees, Krishna devotees, are trained. That's going to entangle you further. What's a delicate way to move people from that expectation of some material gain from spiritual activity? What's a delicate way to encourage them? That's what you're asking?
Particularly if the persons are indeed in a situation where their faith has got challenged because illness has come instead of good health, or
because they have health challenges or some monetary challenge, and so they've got a real need, and so what's a delicate way to help them move to a good direction, something like that? Well, it depends on the person. Some people aren't delicate. Jai Jagannath shared with me how he and Hari Shyam first met. And Jai Jagannath hit him in the face with a baseball bat. So to speak, verbally, a verbal baseball bat. And Hari Shyam went, wow, you know, this guy's good, or what? I don't know exactly what your feelings were, but he didn't run away. But, you know, that's his style. And so Bhaktisiddhanta had his style. Bhaktivinoda had his style, and Prabhupada had his style. And so different people have, inspired by Krishna's style, personality, but also some judgment about when to do this and when to do that. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, don't disturb the minds of those who are attached, those who have faith in something or other. And then in the purport, Prabhupada gives us kind of like a license to disturb people. We're more kind than Krishna. We have a Krishna license to, you know. So much depends upon us as individuals and the other person as an individual and the circumstance of their life, etc. So there's not a cookie cutter answer to this question. Each of us have our tendencies, our personalities. My tendency is to err on the side of caution and not confront unnecessarily. Sometimes confrontation is necessary, and can the person take it? That's another question. So it takes some intuitive understanding of the person or a deeper relationship with the person, and then you can say the needful instead of just confrontational. There's a goal. The goal is to nurture their faith in taking full shelter of Krishna. That's the goal. And that which will take one to get there, that's what you do. If that's your, you know, that's our function in association with others that don't yet have that goal, is to bring them closer to that goal. Where they don't feel judged, they feel encouraged. And that is different for different people. That's my understanding.
Maharaj, I was thinking, because regarding the preaching, you said something about preaching.
Something about?
Preaching.
Preaching.
So when we go and outsider, we approach some karmi people. Those,
karmi people.
Yes. And we have to sometimes praise them. Just to...
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes praise them and to get some lakshmi or... To get some...
Not just that. To give them the opportunity to...
To Krishna consciousness.
Not just luxury.
Yeah. So I was thinking, because the Bali Maharaj case also, like Krishna came and he praised, oh, you are so nice, so that, so all these things, just to get something from him. Like to give...
But it's not just to get something from them. It's to connect them with Krishna.
Yeah.
To connect them with Krishna.
Oh, yeah.
There's many ways they can, people can be, just I'm editing a little bit, because it's not one objective.
Yeah.
Get something from them. Connect them to Krishna.
Yeah, then question is coming regarding Acharya Nishtha. He was telling that there is a nice statement in Bhagavad Gita, action in inaction, and in action. So how will you explain that? Which one is appropriate here in this case?
You want me to explain the action in inaction and action in inaction? You want me to explain? That's what you're asking?
Yes, please. Help.
Well, there's a simple and there's a complicated explanation. Let me just do the simple one. There's akarma, where you're doing but there's no reaction. That's inaction in action. Inaction, no karma, when you're doing karma-free activity. Karma yoga, bhakti yoga, yoga. Karma-free. Inaction. Then the other is karma sannyas, bondage. Action in inaction. Can you give the microphone?
Maharaj, we permanently are reminded that we are not the enjoyers. But. In my personal experience, I see that the deeper we get into a lifestyle according to the teachings, the happier we get, or at least the happier I get. I'm enjoying it. So, is it that bad? Sometimes I feel like we're like the kids that go with the mother to a park and say, like, you cannot enjoy being here.
No, no, no. You know the verse? Look it up. Rupa Goswami, false renunciation, complete renunciation. So complete renunciation is you do stuff, and you get stuff, but not in the mood when you get stuff, in the mood of being the enjoyer of the stuff. But you accept things according to what's suitable. Now, supposing you're a mixed devotee. I know a few mixed devotees. Supposing you're a mixed devotee, then you may accept stuff that's not really in the asakti, the non-attachment mode. It leads to bondage, the non-attachment, the attachment mode, when you get stuff. But what are you going to do because you're a mixed devotee? So you accept, and then you have to undergo some misery. It's not like, you know, someone scolding you. It's just it's renunciation. It's mixed. And therefore, in the mixed position, you're not in the unmixed happiness. And the unmixed happiness is what real happiness is. So how do you navigate that territory? It's described, ninth verse, one of 18,000 ninth verses, by Krishna to Uddhava. You know that it's going to bring misery, but you do it anyways because that's where you are. And you're praying to Krishna to get on the other side of that attachment, not just the misery that comes from the attachment, but engage in hearing and chanting and devotional service as a mixed devotee. I'm just paraphrasing. That's what we do. No, so it's not you're bad. It's just you're not there yet. You're in the mixed position. But you have faith in the goal. You have faith in Krishna and the means to get to the goal. And you follow it, accepting this mixed standard while you're trying to get there. Trying to go beyond the mixed standard, praying to Krishna to go beyond the mixed standard. Because that's the goal. Now, what's the goal of life and the means to reach it? Just like Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's question. And the answer, you know the answer, stane stituk, stay in your position. Don't like get admonished for staying in your position. Stay in your position. Stane stituk, kruti, and then engage in hearing, in chanting, and remembering. And becoming purified. That's the means. And then there's the goal. Purified condition. And stay fixed on the goal as you're in this not yet purified stage. Not, you know, feel guilty. Low self-esteem, all that kind of language. Oh. Gokulananda, nice to see you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Last question, by the way.
I was, you mentioned about the talk that you gave on the topic of the movie Matrix, and that one pill keeps you in illusion, and the other pill is to bring people to reality. So I was wondering how religious institutions sometimes keeps people more in illusion than rather than presenting reality. Like Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the verse Dharma Prajito Kaitavo, and is supposed to break all the upadis, or sarva upadi vinirmuktam.
It's supposed to.
Yes, it's supposed to give people the real identity, no? Like Srila Prabhupada's always emphasizing that we are spiritual souls. But when we come to, let's say, an ISKCON, we get many upadis in terms of varna, ashram. Like, for instance, I'm a brahmachari, and then it's easy to become attached to those upadis, and it can distract us from the real stuff in terms of who we really are. And I was thinking about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he was meeting people, he was destroying his upadis. And the people who were coming to the movement were coming from different social ladder.
Yeah.
And Lord Chaitanya was minimizing those positions and bringing them through devotional service.
Yes.
So I would like if you can comment on how we can survive in a religious institution that, because of the function of an institution, it has to give you different upadis. So, but how we can get focused on and get also pleasure from the philosophy, from the practices, rather than looking for a position or getting comfortable with a position. After 10 years of practicing devotional service, we get respected by people, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I three things. Your questions are often in the category of the voice of social conscience, and I like it. Second is this very topic that you're bringing up is exactly one of the Gita Nagari retreat themes, which was acceptance and moving forward. So it's all recorded. You can listen to it. Different speakers with different perspectives on that topic. And it's one of Jai Jagannath's favorite ones, acceptance and progress as an institution or a religious organization. Then we're all individuals and we're going to move according to our spiritual capacity, according to, you know, so many variables. But the principle is acceptance and progress. And then finally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, don't be complacent, accept what's realistic for you, and always be ready to move on. That's acceptance and progress. That was the principle from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teaching, and a principle for a religious institution, religious organization. And we honor, say it one more time, that different people are going to be in different positions, and that's just fine. We wish to encourage people to be accepting and make progress. And realistic, not unrealistic progress, according to what one can sustain and maintain over time. Progress in that, and to that degree and in that direction. And support that. Now, we're not always accepting of another's. I recently had some interaction with a person who was having a hard time accepting that devotees should be up here and instead they're, you know, the material world, but, you know, devotees should be not like that. They weren't accepting. Here's Prabhupada's statement, and it's, and I'm going to end. As one lady wrote a letter to Prabhupada and said, Swamiji, you're doing wonderful work. Swamiji, some of your followers don't represent you very well. And Swamiji, you're doing wonderful work. And Prabhupada wrote a letter back saying, thank you for your appreciation of the wonderful work. And as far as my followers, please consider them to be like persons who know that they're not clean, they're in the shower to become clean, and they're trying to become clean. So please allow them to become clean and recognize that they're trying to become clean. And thank you again for your kind appreciation for my good work. So like that, as you know, that as a religious organization, we, not just that lady, but we as members of the organization, this organization or another organization, another regarding, you know, this interfaith dialogue appreciator over here, appreciate that they're at a certain stage. We appreciate that they're at a certain stage. And we honor that. And, you know, if there's some way that they, if they so desire to see what the next step is, then model it for them. And say it in a, you know, back to Krishnarjuna's question, model it, say it in a way that's, you know, not judgmental and not harsh and, you know, appropriate for the person or the circumstance. As a religious organization, regarding other religious organizations, and vice versa. Are there religious organizations that look at, you know, we're not walking our talk because look at what some of your members do, da-da-da-da-da. It goes on. So, that's a short reply to a big question, the social conscious question. I don't want to take it further because of time. I'm going to end, if that's okay. He's reaching for the microphone. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is that Gopasundari? Wow. Haribol.